It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Today, we are on the south side of San Francisco, visiting one of the most active and respected produce distribution centers in the country, Earl's Organics. We will visit with the founder, Earl Herrick, about his journey that brought him from Ohio to San Francisco, the support they offer beginning farmers, their annual pilgrimage to the January Eagle Farm Conference in Pacific Grove, California, and the future. Before going upstairs to visit with Earl, we start in the coolers with all the sounds of produce coming and going. Susan Simmets, the marketing and social media manager, gives us a tour and some taste of delicious fruit on its way from farm to table.
You have the pallet jacks, you have forklifts, you've got people going in and out of the coolers, men and women, loading product off the trucks, and we have triple racking in our warehouses, so you're hearing them, moving them to different levels of the warehouse, rotating items in the cooler, and this goes on, we're open almost 24/7.
You say triple racking, so it looks like there's like three shelves or
three tall shelves, and it's about a 30,000 square foot warehouse. And we have many different coolers for all of the different products, depending on whether it's a fruit or a veg and how cold it needs to be kept. And so you will constantly hear people coming in and out of the warehouse.
I heard your team doing a podcast the other night, and somebody was saying that you've got some vegetables that, like tomatoes, mm-hmm. that you don't put them in the cooler. You're actually
exactly.
keeping them room temperature.
They're in an ambient room.
Oh, okay. And then the other stuff, it's got to be really chilly, really cold.
Yes.
You have like three different levels, isn't there?
There's three different coolers. One is a wet cooler, so we'll keep some items iced. And so those items can include things like carrots or broccoli or corn, leeks, things like that. And that's a separate cooler. And now we're standing in the cooler with apples and potatoes and stone fruit and berries and figs. And so this is the same temperature as the wet cooler, but it is not iced. So you won't find any water on the floor in here. And then we have one more cooler that's citrus, basil, green beans, cucumbers, melons, and you can really smell each cooler, which I love coming into them. And that one is a little bit warmer than this cooler that you're standing in. And then we have the ambient room, so squash, tomatoes, garlic, onions, we don't refrigerate those. But because this is a warehouse made out of cement, or at least the outside of it is cement, that ambient room is a very perfect temperature for those commodities. So we don't need to...
Well, can we walk down this row a little bit? I'm seeing, okay, there's potatoes, lots of potatoes.
So you have potatoes on this particular row, and as we head to the end, you'll find stone fruit. So we are transitioning from California into the Pacific Northwest. So we have a little bit of California left, but for the most part, we're really heading into Oregon and Washington stone fruit. And then straight ahead of you, you have California grapes. So we are in the peak of California table grape season. So we've got red, green, black seedless, lots of varieties, Flames, Stella Bella, Thompson, Concord grapes will be coming on soon.
And I see a lot of berries. So this is the really cold room.
Yes.
So you have to have cold enough for these berries mm-hmm. to get really
chilled. Strawberries and blueberries and
how long is something in here before it gets moved out?
Usually it's really fast turnaround. We want to be in and out. And as Earl likes to say, it's like a hospital. So everything's dying. So he might actually express that also. But as soon as it's in, we want to get it out to our customers so that they can sell it to you and you can take it home and enjoy it.
So I'm seeing these like this basket of raspberries here. Mm-hmm. I mean, boxes full of raspberries. And they don't last very long at all. I mean, when you get them pick them up at the store, mm-hmm. I mean, I find I've got to eat them usually in a couple days.
Yeah, you want to eat them as soon as possible. And so we are buying every single day. We have orders that are coming in every day from the growers. So again, it's in and out. We want to keep it as fresh as possible.
That's a lot of coordination.
Yes, that's why you have lots of wonderful people working here.
But you're getting all the product. And now you got mushrooms here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mushrooms must have a longer shelf life.
They do have a longer shelf life, and we have some gourmet mushrooms, specialty varieties like a velvet piapini, a maitake, and then we have creminis and white mushrooms and shiitake and portobello. So there is quite a variety, and those can stay in here a little bit longer.
So when the trucks are coming in and bringing all this in, you're accumulating and you're organizing, then you're putting together what? Truckloads for certain customers that are mixing that they want certain amount of berries and
mushrooms. We're building pallets every night. And so there is a night crew that will build those orders, and we have trucks going out all over the Bay Area. So we go as far north as Reno in the Sierra Nevada area. And then as far south as Carmel Valley.
And then what about the supply coming in? How far afield is the production
coming in from California, Arizona, depending on the time of year. Mexico, when we're into that season, but we still have some commodities coming out of Mexico. For example, avocados. And
I heard something about them talking about the avocados. It was saying that you have to keep an eye out when you're in the transition period, because when you're switching from California to Mexico, that the California, you probably want to keep them in the refrigerator because they're going to have a hard time lasting. It's a tail end, and the Mexican avocados are just now starting, and you want to leave them on the counter and so that they can start ripening. Did I get that right?
Yes, and there's actually not a lot of California fruit left right now, so the big thing is California ended early this year. Prices are skyrocketing. We're saying green is the new gold. It's outrageous. So when you go to the store, expect it to be expensive. So there are a few growers left in California, and they are going to be coming more from Northern California area or Central Coast. So because they started later in the season, they still won't have super high oil content. I definitely recommend it this time of year because it is Northern California fruit, to leave it on the counter. Mexico is starting, not a lot out there. Definitely going to take longer. It's the Flora Loca, which is their first crop out of four. And it is really knowing where you are in the season and how to eat it and when to wait for and to expect it to be lower in oil content at the beginning of the Mexico season.
I just heard a podcast from some people that were in New York that were trying to get organized to resist avocado toast because they just decided that they can't go anywhere anymore that they don't have avocado toast.
That's very interesting.
It was an example that, you know, some years ago people outside of California and Texas hardly knew what an avocado was.
Right.
And now it's so trendy.
Every cafe.
Everybody's got
buy an avocado, it's cheaper. And do it yourself.
But one other quick thing I wanted to say, that you also added another change of territory a little earlier. You're making the comment about switching to some products coming from the Northwest now. Mm-hmm. Never think about that. I kind of think of the Southern Hemisphere in California. But how many products is it that you start moving up into Oregon and Washington?
I don't have a number of products, but I would say it's just as the season changes. So, for example, pears and apples. Mm-hmm. Right now we're in California pear season for Bartlett's and Bosque, but we do have some coming out of the Pacific Northwest. For example, Star Crimson, the Tusca pear, because Washington has a bigger amount of growers for the pears and the apples. They have more acreage. Yeah. So California, you know, definitely has a presence, but it's not as long as the Washington. And so you'll see some of those things changing, and then eventually it'll all go, or mostly go up to the Pacific Northwest. There are some California apple growers that were hanging on for quite a while.
So right after I walked into your place, I was offered some cherry tomatoes. And I wonder how often that happens, that you open something that's new and that everybody gets to take a bite of whatever's coming in.
I would say that one of the things about Earl's is that we get to taste what we're selling. So if you called us and you wanted to know what's the best today, or where is it coming from, or what's that flavor, we can tell you because we have had a chance to sample it. So as the salespeople, for example, we walk the coolers every day. We go through, we know what's coming in, we know where it's coming from, who's the grower, where's the area, where are we in the season. So we can really explain that as an education component that's really important. So you were lucky enough to get some cherry tomatoes from Elwood Canyon out of Goleta, and they do a beautiful mixed medley variety.
Whereabouts is that?
10 minutes north of Santa Barbara.
Oh, okay. I just drove through there.
Yeah, beautiful farm area, and two young guys that are passionate about organic, and they've been farming for about 9 years, and they are farming on land they're leasing from a gentleman who's in his 90s, who had been farming for years on organic land, obviously wanted to continue that. And so we have Jack and Jeff that are taking over that tradition, and we represent them exclusively.
Okay, they were delicious. So how much of that do you think is coming from their irrigation practices, that they know just how to give them enough and keep the tomato working hard versus the variety?
I would say it's probably everything altogether. And again, I'm not down on the farm, but from talking to them actually at EcoFarm, I did an interview with them in January. It's their passion for what they're doing, nurturing the soil, picking those varieties that have flavor.
Yeah.
So sometimes people are picking things just for size or color or for shipping, right? What's a longer shipper?
Yeah.
For them, it's really that flavor and sharing something that is excellent with their customers. And so it's an easy ride up to our warehouse and straight out to our customers. Yeah, we're really lucky.
So farmers like that are shipping to you, do you ever get them connected with the end user? So if there's a certain restaurant or store that's using, so that they can get really direct feedback on what their consumers are thinking about their product?
I would say we talk to our customers about our growers constantly. So if there is feedback, we would share it. But also on my end as a marketing person, I'm writing blogs and making flyers and doing press releases and sharing that information with the customers so they can tell the people that they're buying it, make cards or, you know, where is it coming from and who are these growers. And some people are buying into the story more than others, but it's really fun to share it.
How can you tell how many people really care anymore? I mean, I'm sure you're getting feedback, but I mean, are you able to tell when you're doing the social media that you've got this certain audience that they just get excited about stories like you just shared with us about the people growing their cherry tomatoes?
Yeah, social media is interesting because you have the general public and it's from all over the world. We have people from all different countries that are on social media. But then because I do direct marketing to our customers, I definitely get feedback in. And you know, going into a grocery store, you see signs on the wall, here's pictures of the grower, here's the story. You can tell there's definitely people that really want to share handmade signs, or we'll send them materials and they'll put it up so that you know more when you have, you can make a better choice when you're shopping.
I love those handmade signs.
You feel closer to it, right?
It's not just that's right. They just got to use a crayon or something. And tell the story. Well, this is great. And do we have, can we walk into one more cooler?
Let's go to the last cooler. Actually, we have two more coolers in here.
Two more coolers. Okay, we're going through these big plastic vertical.
You're not freezing yet.
No.
This cooler actually will feel a little warmer. So you feel good, right? You're not as chilly. And this cooler will have melons, peppers, cucumbers. Oh, you know what we have actually that I'm very excited about are Hatch chilies from New Mexico. So Hatch chilies can only be called Hatch chilies from the Hatch Valley. And New Mexico is one of my favorite places, so I'm personally very excited. And we have medium and hot. And right now, if you're driving through New Mexico, you will be able to smell these chilies roasting. They've got the roasters right in front of all the stores, and they're churning them, and you can buy them by the bag. So this is
only,
this is
they have to be from New Mexico?
They have to be from the Hatch Valley of New Mexico.
Oh, Hatch Valley. So this is kind of like Parmigiano cheese or champagne. Or
Walla Walla onions from Walla Walla, Washington.
Okay.
So you can't call it a Hatch chili if it's not from that area. But this is a very special 1.5 month pepper that... it's really unique and really special. Yeah. And that's another thing, that we have some amazing varieties that we share. Let's go back in the figs. I'll get you guys a fig.
Now we've left the coolers and we've walked upstairs to the offices of Earl's Organics to visit with Earl Herrick.
Earl. Welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Great. Glad to be here.
Hey, you know what? It's great being here. I get so excited. I get out of my car and I walk into the building. And as soon as I walk into your place, I'm offered some tomatoes. And I think, okay, this is a good sign. When I get something to eat, it's like going to a good restaurant where I enjoy the ones that bring an appetizer without asking you. When you come into a place like this and say, here, try these tomatoes. And they were delicious, by the way. And then when I got to walk around a little bit, I started to have to admit to you, I sampled a few other things.
Very good. That's the thing to do.
Is that what you do, is when you go out walking around and you try all the food that's coming in every morning?
Yeah, absolutely. That's integral. And I've seen so many times that that's not not only recommended, but modeled. People tend to function, which is great. But I refer to it as kind of walking the orchard, where you work with purpose, but you also develop a style where you're, it's almost peripheral vision, where you also can stop and check out a box of oranges or try that ripe fig or have a conversation with somebody that may know more or less than you and talk about what's in front of you. It's a great process.
Well, you do that process at the farms, too.
I mean, yes.
You know, it's one thing to be in here and walking through the coolers and being able to try the products coming in from the farms, but I'll bet you've had a farmer driving you around their orchards or walking you through their orchards and trying stuff out at the farm, have you not?
Well, yeah, we like to, I don't know, about six times a year, maybe more frequently, really varies. Definitely get there, whether it's a small group or one or twice a year, we get a larger group that goes. 2 weeks ago, we went to the Delta of California, looked at pears and apples, and later in that same week, went down to a strawberry grower in Watsonville. So, yeah, and that gives us that opportunity of, well, getting back, getting grounded. If you're not familiar with it, you're introducing yourself again or whoever's with you, and making a connection with the grower is probably as important as seeing the product grow.
I would imagine almost every time you go out there, you're actually grabbing something and tasting it, though, in the field, or, you know.
Well, some things lend itself more than others. Well, for strawberries, of course, but pears you're not going to because they're going to be unripe, but apples, yes. So it really depends. Avocados, that's not the case.
Earl, you grew up in Ohio.
Yes.
And then how do you come out here and get this religion? I mean, you're passionate about fruits we didn't grow. I grew up in the Midwest, too. I grew up on a farm in Illinois. And you grew up in Ohio. So where did that come from?
Yeah.
When you came out here and, you kind of got the religion about this, about fruits and vegetables and loving them. And when you talk to you, just like walking through here, I can see that passion. Where'd that come from?
Wow. Well, thank you. I think it's the two guys that I worked with that introduced me to the industry. They were both produce geeks, incredible hard workers, and I was a hard worker already, I thought. And they had an integrity that was unwavering in not only the work that they modeled and demanded, but also talking about fruit, eating fruit, sampling fruit, sharing fruit, mostly fruit because that's the easiest to get into right away. And that was just established in me from the get-go, and that's hard not to enjoy.
So when you're out there, so early on getting started, you were tasting product, tasting on the farms, tasting it when it was coming in, and then you developed your favorites.
Yes.
And so over the years, now you've developed, like, well, not only what might be your favorite fruit, for example, or, you know, or vegetables, but specific varieties.
Yes.
And I would guess maybe even production practices. I mean, can you tell, like, some fruits and what the production system probably was, and whether it's had enough water or too much water and things like that?
Yeah, part of what we've learned over time is our job is not just buying and selling and distribution, it's educating. So we've just gone through 6 years of drought and then one incredible year of rehydration, and the change that was going on and then that gave us huge opportunity to get up to speed on that. So a couple examples. One would be Satsuma mandarins, where we get to visit the grower north of Sacramento and other growers. It's a real hub of Satsumas. And staying in touch with him, it's a gentleman, every year about how's the drought affecting you, and now in year three, and then, wow, we had rain. And so this year he told me 4 months ago it's going to be a great crop. And then about 2 months ago, he said, wow, we just had a huge heat wave, knocked many of the blossoms off, and it's probably half the volume now. I mean, just like that. And so understanding that and factoring that in and then kind of reconfiguring that information that we can then put out to our customers is incredibly valuable.
You know, Earl, when you start talking about it again, the passion comes through just in revisiting things. I'm wondering when you really got the bug. I mean, how long ago would you say, I'm a produce man?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I came out from Ohio, I was interested in my diet and you know, understanding I was a vegetarian for a while. And so that was there, a certain level. And then being introduced by those gentlemen and being in California, I mean, it's very hard not to enjoy what you're eating. For example, I had never had an artichoke or an avocado before I got out here. So being introduced to avocados, I was done right there. I was eating avocados every day. The passion came from, for me, visiting the grower. But to answer the question about I'm a produce man, I don't think I really owned it absolutely till I started my business. Because when I left being a retailer, I sat around for a week or two going, I don't know, what am I going to do? I've done produce for 8, 10, 12 years, and I guess I'm a produce guy. Well, I guess I'm going to stay in a produce. So that was really the solidification of it. But prior to that, when I was coming down to the market every day, 12 o'clock at night, that foundation was laid.
So now you've done it 30 years, is that right?
As rural, as a wholesaler.
Right.
And then 10 years before that as a retailer. So yeah, we're in our 30th year next year.
So what does that mean to you?
It means I'm old.
Well, you survived. You're in an area of the country where there aren't many businesses that last 30 years.
Well, I tell you, it means different things at different times, in different areas. It means one, we're pioneers now. I didn't really think of it in the day. We're now experts, and with that is a real responsibility, which I'm lucky enough to be able to shoulder because I have so many great people working with me. Because this is by no means about me any longer. It passed probably the first year. I have an incredible amount of veterans, passionate, committed people that really make it incredibly easy for us to be who we are.
You know, Earl, you chose the words there. You said the pioneer.
Yeah.
And you have incredible responsibility and you have good people. And that reminds me of a couple of things. And that is that you've supported organizations. One of them, event you've sponsored, EcoFarm, for over 20 years. And each year you're sending more and more of your own people to that conference. Last year, I think you had nearly 30 people that came to the conference. Why do you make such an effort to get your employees out to a program like EcoFarm?
Oh, boy. I'm going to go back to some of the early days when I went, and I was so impressed and struck by the gathering of people. It was tangible. It was palatable. Being there, you know, like arriving, driving down from San Francisco in the rain and getting there Wednesday or Thursday and going down and registering and all these people are there. And you know a portion of them, but it's what you feel and what you see. It sparks, one, if you don't have the passion, boy, it certainly ignites it. And for me, it just kind of continued to reaffirm why I'm in this industry, and it has a heck of a lot to do with the people that are in it. The 30 people last year, that's fairly standard for us in the last 10, 12 years. We bring as many buyers and sellers, and then always a portion of people we've just hired within the last year. And that, for the people that are new, it's an incredible inoculation. Many of the people we hire do not have the understanding of organic agriculture like many of us do. So for them, it's an incredible immersion. And then they go to seminars, they hang out, they sit down and eat, and they hang out with their fellow Earls organic people. It is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
How about you personally? What do you get from it?
Well, for me, it's an opportunity to see people that sometimes I only see once a year. Sometimes I may only see once every 5 years. To gather, have a meal with them, have some hours spent, sometimes focusing on work, sometimes just over a glass of wine and a meal. That, for me, this business is relationships. I mean, I believe that's a foundation of any business, relationships. And the strength and the beauty is the strength and the beauty of the relationships that I have. So so if I can't get to that farmer down in San Diego in Temecula, I'm gonna contact him early at some point and go, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing you in January up in EcoFarm. Can you make it this year? And if not, then we're going to set a date somewhere else. So it's that, continuing those relationships, but also, boy, the seminars down there are incredible. Anywhere from beekeeping to you know, women in agriculture to, you know, how there's new software for truck drivers. It is incredibly diverse, and it's continually broadening its stretch into what's possible. In the last, I don't know how many years it's been, we have that, I don't know what it's called, the big tent that goes up, and there's what's that called? It's an exhibitor marketplace. And to go there, I get to see a lot of my friends and do a little shopping myself, and it's really great to be able to... Stephen Pavich. So the Pavich family is renowned back in the day in grapes. So I'm walking around one day, and here's a gentleman I think I recognize, and I see his business card is Stephen Pavich, and I mean, you know, it's like running into Robert Redford. I mean, it's pretty great to be able to see these... The backbone. I mean, now, I mean, there are people probably in the industry that don't even know the Pavich name anymore, which is a shame. But that's also the way of things. I go there also to get recharged. I mean, that is no joke about it. However, you know, jaded I may be from a situation of a lost crop or something, you know, it's easily reestablished down there in a heartbeat. You know, walking onto the property, down that driveway, it's really amazing hearing the surf crash. It's a pretty special place.
Now I'm wondering what they get out of it. When they come back, do you have a chance to sit around, or even on the car ride back from Monterey?
Yes.
And compare notes. What do you hear from your team after they've been to Eco Farm together? What's that like, that following week?
Wow, everybody's shot out of a cannon. Everybody's just recommitted, re-energized, and they're coming and they're bringing with them what they have culled from that particular conference, and it varies with every person. What we've started in the last 5 years is formalizing our process of who's going and who's going, and we prep them with what do you want to get out of it, because the pamphlet comes out every year. They take a look at the seminars available, and then upon their return, we have them write down the four biggest things what seminars did they attend, what did they get out of it, and what can we expect of them. So that really gives a real structure to it, which allows us, I think, to get a little bit more out of it.
You know, I wish more companies had that attitude. I've been around enough that I've seen people that are always trying to cut corners and say, gee, do we have to send somebody to that? I don't think we can afford it. I mean, you're investing in your people, and that includes not only EcoFarm, but the way you described getting them out on the farms and knowing their suppliers, and then knowing the customers, too. And Earl, I want to compliment you on that. Not everybody does that anymore.
Thank you. You know, I interview everybody that we hire. I hire everybody that we have. And for me, there's a real commitment to that. In that process, I get to understand who knows what. I mean, at least a little bit of it. And, for example, today, when you're here, we had three new people go through their orientation. And all three of those people don't have any experience in organic agriculture at all, or retail, or distribution. But they each have interesting, possibilities, whether it's a warehouse engagement, equipment engagement, or just one particular gentleman is young, and I just got from him, he's got an interest in lights behind the eyes that I know that I... So part of my process, I go, what we have here is an opportunity. And if I look for people that have a certain amount of passion, and perhaps there's the chance that this is the avenue that you can express your passion.
Well, I would imagine that in 30 years... Not all of them worked out. I mean, I'm sure there's some that it didn't click. I mean, it's not their thing.
Sure.
And for various reasons, it didn't work. But others, probably you were glad to see they captured the passion that you did and got as excited and were energized from being around the farmers and being around people who cared about the food like you do.
My director of purchasing is Robert Lichtenberg, and his wife's a psychologist. And they were talking one evening, and he came back to me the next day. He says, you know, Sylvia, his wife, says, you know, Earl looks to hire himself. And you know, I laughed for a moment. I said, I don't think so. Moments later, I went, well, that's absolutely true. That is what I do without knowing it. I look for that person that wants to get engaged, because this is an incredible opportunity. I wanted to say something else about the early days. So the first five eco-farms we went to, I shut down the company entirely for Thursday and Friday and took everybody down. Obviously, we were a lot smaller, but boy, then that really gave to kind of a tribal gathering. And I just wanted to touch that. I had forgotten that, but it was a real, real great time then, too.
Well, you know, I recently heard you on another podcast. My listeners would be surprised. No, there are other podcasts that deal with food. And what I like is that an organic conversation. You've been involved with it for a long time, and and I would encourage people to listen to it as well. But you had two other team members with you talking about it. And what struck me was... But normally you think of the boss, well, here's Earl talking, and then you have these other people talking. You would think that might fall off a little bit, but not at all. I mean, in their areas, they were enthusiastic, and really you could tell the passion that they had, but also the knowledge that they had developed. So I'm sure we could go deeper than three and find out others that have done the same thing. That's exciting.
Oh, it really is. And what's so great is... those two in particular, since we're referring to that podcast, they too are very passionate. One, the young lady, I hired her 11 years ago as a receptionist. And a couple years receptionist and went to logistics and became an assistant buyer. And I was fortunate enough to be able to mentor her directly and to see her just not only take it on, but continue to grow and blossom and to be incredibly accountable is a real joy to me. And now this industry has another wonderful resource. I mean, she can go anywhere in this industry and get a very powerful job. And then Anthony came from the East Coast. He had a company called Deep Roots. He ran the entire thing, kind of a grower. Yeah, he interfaced with the grower, seed planting, took in the harvest, and then resold it. And when he left, they had to replace him with four of their employees. So his engagement and his commitment to the industry is very solid.
Well, it really comes through. And all I got was a free fig this morning, and I'm ready to be an evangelist for you. It was like the best fig I'd ever had in my life.
Yeah. Well, you know, 95% of the figs in the United States are grown here. And this is Maywood Farms up in Corning, just north of Sacramento, 105 degrees today. And it is a wonderful thing, a huge advantage and opportunity to be in San Francisco, where, you know, the agriculture, as you know, is an ex-almond guy. 95% of almost everything is grown here. And being in San Francisco with the elevated food culture that it is, It's an incredible opportunity, incredible place. And then, of course, the economic boom that's going on here. We're in a pretty nice situation.
You know, Earl, there's a lot of people that want to get into the business now, and then the young farmers are trying to get started. And it's not easy for anybody getting into any business. The farming's pretty hard to get started in. But how do you try to encourage new farmers and maybe support young farmers as they're getting on their
feet? Yeah. Well, that is what we love to do. Business doesn't always allow us to do as much of that as we want. And I wouldn't say we go out and look for them as actively. We're not as proactive. But what we do when they come across our radar, whether it's, for example, we do a CCOF tour once or twice a year. And out of that, we've gotten a number of growers that from that a tour that we do in the warehouse, we exchange business cards and we connect after that. And then from that process, it's about developing a relationship. It's not unlike dating. I mean, it doesn't always work, and it goes as far as the two people involved. For example, what came out of this last one this past year is a blueberry grower out of Tulare, California. They had never sold them organically. We contacted each other, and together we developed their label, the configurations of pints and 6 ounce and 18 ounce, understood the timing of the year, committed to a certain number of volume for a certain period of time, and was a total success for. We were not able to get to the farm yet. We're going to go in the off season, which is now that we're in. She's happy. It happens to be a woman. She's happy as pie, and we love it. So there's another grower. So the process is helping them through whatever they need, whether it's helping them choose what they want to grow, a label, post-harvest handling, any number of things they want.
As you look ahead to the next 30 years, maybe we should just say the next 30 months, What gives you the most encouragement?
The market's still growing, even here in San Francisco, which I would say may be considered the birthplace of organic. We're still seeing it. For example, we have an independent group of four stores north of here that we've known for years. We did some business, stopped doing business in the last 2 years. We've reconnected with them, and we're just doing a portion of what we can be doing with them. And they're already our fourth or fifth largest customer. It's odd because here we are in San Francisco, the West Coast, and our point of view can be unique. The election showed some of that, I think. So what I see is what the market's doing. Maybe it's not, I mean, it's going to be different than Davenport, Iowa. But we are seeing continued growth in an area that is very mature. So back in the day, being on the market in San Francisco, or you know, it was a joke back in the mid-70s. And now, there's not a store, or I would even say restaurant, in the city and its area around it that doesn't have some organic distinction to it. Whether it's a restaurant saying this mix is from, you know, Star Route Farms, to a corner store that's got organic Strauss milk, and definitely has some local guy down the road that has a garden going on. So it continues to grow. Also, the people that I'm hiring all of all ages, and I see a lot of incredible interest and commitment to alternative, not only ag, but just alternative ways of thinking and looking at things all the time. I'm continually kind of revitalized by the engagement that people have that I get to speak with.
Well, I'm glad you're getting that feedback, because you're putting a lot out there. You're inspiring people, and it's good to see you're developing your own people and helping farmers get on their feet, too.
Yep.
Earl, if people would like to know more about your program, where do they find you online? Where do they find information?
Well, we have a website, www.earlsorganic.com. My email is earlh@earlsorganic.com. We're 24/7. We have trucks all over Northern California. If you're looking, you'll find me.
They'll find you.
Or
find
us, yes.
Yeah, and if they get to know you like I have, they'll be able to steal a piece of fruit.
Oh, absolutely. Just come hungry.
Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.